don't you understand that the mental health system is a definition of insanity at this point? We keep doing the same thing again and again, and we expect a different outcome.
I think we're treating mental illnesses as if they're a category by itself. And we manage this in a completely different way than any other medical illness.
We know how to help most people with mental illnesses. We just don't do it because of the money.
We're not going to be called nuts and psychos and wackos anymore. We're changing the world here.
The problem is we refer to it as a system, and it isn't a system. It is lots of things that are sort of put together almost by bubblegum.
Pointed comments from Minds on the Edge, a lively debate about mental illness in America. Mental health organizations estimate that schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, and other serious mental illnesses affect between 4 and 8 million people in this country. Yet, healthcare for these conditions is in disarray. People who can be treated are stigmatized, warehoused, jailed, or allowed to wander homeless on the streets. Families desperately looking for help feel stymied by a baffling court system and a tangle of laws. There are solutions out there, though, and you're about to meet some people who are working on them. I'm Cokie Roberts. This is a Fred Friendly seminar. Our job, said the legendary CBS newsman Fred Friendly more than half a century ago, is not to make up anybody's mind, but to make the agony of decision-making so intense you can escape only by thinking. In the unique format of the Fred Friendly seminars, our moderator presents a hypothetical scenario to our panelists. They respond from their own expertise and experience, as a person who suffered with mental illness, as a family member who's helped battle it, or as a professional trying to offer help in a labyrinthine system. With us are a Supreme Court Justice, a Nobel Laureate brain researcher, an advocate for the homeless, and an eminent group of healthcare providers. Three have also battled schizophrenia. We'll begin with Supreme Court Justice Stephen Breyer, brain researcher Dr. Eric Kandel, and psychiatrist Dr. Tracy Scale. Our moderator is award-winning broadcast journalist and professor of media and public affairs at George Washington University, Frank Sesno.
Justice Breyer, Professor Breyer, you're worried. It's about Olivia, a student of yours at Commonwealth University, and Olivia's been a great student up till now, but something seems to have been changing. She's speaking rapidly. Some of her ideas don't hold together. The last paper she turned in had all these markings in the margins and arrows, some things that actually didn't make any sense to you. She appears disheveled, and she looks like she hasn't slept maybe in days. What are you thinking?
I'm thinking this is a problem, and maybe she needs some help.
You see her a couple of days later in the college bookstore. She is on a buying binge, buying texts, medical texts, hundreds of dollars, maybe more, of these books. You ask her what she's doing, and she says, I'm studying states of consciousness. And your thoughts are?
I think maybe she's becoming a little manic. And maybe she should talk to somebody, and I could guide her to that person.
Well, it's interesting that you mention that, because it turns out that your good friend and colleague, Eric Kandel, he knows something about this.
Eric, what do you think I should do here? A student is having a really serious problem. She's writing all these notes, don't make sense. She's looked as if she was on a buying binge. How would you deal with it?
I would recommend that you speak to her directly and ask her what's happening in her life. Point out to her that you have been aware of the fact that there's a change in the pattern, and that you presume she might be uncomfortable, unhappy with something. And the mere fact that you show empathy is going to be helpful to her. She seems to be going to what might be a manic episode, and she clearly needs help.
You've actually said she may be ill.
Yes, she's clearly getting ill.
Dr. Scale, what's going on in Olivia's mind, do we think?
Olivia might not know that she has anything wrong at all. In fact, Olivia is working on some great paper, and she might have very excited, grandiose ideas. So she might be wondering why her professor is saying this to her. Yet, I agree with you, Dr. Kandel, that having that empathy and initial support is a huge factor.
Professor, what would you actually say to Olivia when you sit down with her?
Say, Olivia, I was a little worried the way you were in class, and I want to know what you're thinking. How are you feeling? Would it be a good idea, do you think, that we go over and talk to the counselor?
Fred Fries, you're a psychologist with 30 years' experience in public mental health. What is Olivia likely to say?
Professor, there's nothing wrong with me. You're trying to paint the picture that I'm ill.
I'm just working on something, and I'll work it out on my own.
To which you say?
Well, I'd say that that's possible. I mean, you know, sometimes I can be involved in something, and I think I've never seen anything so good, and then my wife or my children point out, well, you know, you're overdoing this. And I don't know I'm overdoing it. I just wonder if maybe it would be a good idea just to talk to somebody here. I don't think you're...
What kind of person do you want me to talk to?
A counselor.
Well, I very much appreciate your concern for me. Do you know this counselor?
No, I don't, but I...
How can I trust who this counselor would be if you don't even know who this is?
Part of the university.
Well, here, that's no...
how's it going, Professor?
Not very well. Not very well.
Ellen Sachs?
Olivia, whether or not you have a mental illness isn't the issue. You seem to be having a hard time. You seem to be suffering. Why don't we just go talk to someone who's trained to understand these kinds of distress?
I've talked to these counselors before, and they never know anything.
Let me come back to the professor. On Parents' Weekend last October, you actually met Olivia's mom and dad. Her father said, Professor, Olivia loves your class. And, you know, if you ever think you want to talk to me about my daughter, feel free to do so. Do you call the parents?
Absolutely.
What do you tell them?
I say, I'm worried about your daughter. And I describe the behavior, and what do you think? What do you think I ought to do?
Pete Early, you're a journalist who's gone through this kind of journey with your own son in real life. Problem?
Absolutely. I'm concerned. I have a professor who's called me, someone my daughter respects. And I've also noticed in my conversations that something's wrong. I'm alarmed because the school knows. I realize that people with mental illness get thrown out of schools. So I immediately want to go see my daughter.
Senator Avell Gordley, Mom, you talk regularly to your daughter, but... when you start calling her over the last couple of days, she's not answering the phone. School's not too far away, so you just decide to get in the car and go and see what you see. When you get to her school, she's not in her room, and her friends say they have not seen her for the last couple of days. What's going through your minds?
Olivia's in trouble, and as her mom, I want to get to her, and I want to get her to some help.
So you're out looking for her, and you come across Olivia in a park, and she's walking in circles, and she's muttering to herself, and she's talking about states of consciousness. And you go up to your daughter, because this is not the Olivia you know, and you say what?
Tell me what you're thinking. We've heard you're not in class. You didn't answer our calls. What's going on? Why are you unhappy? Are you sad? Why are you in this park walking around in circles?
I throw my arms around her and I hug her. I pull her close. I tell her that I love her. I'm concerned. I'm fearful for her. She needs help, and I want to help her get that help.
Fred Fries, how might she respond to her mother and father?
Well, they need to understand that there's this spa up in the Mandarin Hotel, and if I can get to that spa, it's going to solve all the problems I've worked for. And Dad, I know it's $700 a day to get to that spot. But if you could just get me there, I know it is going to wash out and I'll be able to put the papers together and everything.
Okay, Olivia. That sounds okay. Let's try to do that. But first, maybe you should go talk to somebody who might be able to help you get a better feel for why are you wanting to go to a spa? And you, then, you know...
No, you're thinking mental illness. This is not mental illness. I've made some... very important discoveries here related to that spot, and I can't explain it now, but I need to get there.
You have tried to reason with her. What's your next step?
You know, look, she's obviously not responding. She doesn't want to go see anyone. So I don't know any psychiatrists in this area. I don't want to go to the school because I don't want her to get thrown out of school. So what's our choice? I think we better take her to an emergency room.
You talk to Olivia, and she agrees to get in the car. And as you drive, Olivia becomes more agitated. And not only does she say she needs to go to the spa, but she needs to go to Washington, D.C., too, because she wants to bring this information to the president. And if she can touch the president's
forehead... The spa is in Washington, D.C. That's it.
And she can then... Olivia. We're in the car. We're on our way.
But you go...
to an emergency room.
To the emergency room. And Olivia, reluctantly, goes in the emergency room with you. And Dr. Simpatico is there. What do you want him to do?
Doctor, our daughter is acting bizarrely. She is apparently manic. She wants to go to this spa. We literally have forced her to come in to see you. Help us.
Dr. Simpatico, you're a professor of psychiatry at the University of Vermont College of Medicine.
My first reaction is that I share their concern, and those concerns are supported by what Olivia appears to look like at first blush. So my reaction would be to tell them that I think they've made the right choice to bring her for an evaluation, and my next step would be to talk with Olivia and get a better sense of what's going on.
Okay, well, since Fred Fries, you become Olivia here, it would appear, and we thank you for that. You've pulled yourself together. What do you say?
Doc, my folks are getting older here. I don't know why they brought me in here. They've had some trouble in the past, and we're on our way to Washington because they promised to take me to the spa, but they said I had to stop by here. Isn't that silly? I mean, there's no purpose in it.
And what do you hope to accomplish once you get to Washington?
At the spa? Well, I've been working on this project, and Washington is the center of a lot of activity. Very important people in Washington. I know if I can get in with those waters, it'll help me with this project I'm working on.
But Olivia has something else in her mind, too. She does not want to be here or treated. What can you do?
I would not feel comfortable having Olivia simply leave the emergency department. I'd want to get more information.
God bless you. That's not what happens.
Yes,
what happens is the doctor asks a series of quick questions. What does crying over spilt milk mean? Who's president? Do you know what day it is? And then comes to the parent and says, the law is very specific. Unless this person poses a danger to themselves or others, I may not require them to stay in this hospital. So, you know, good luck and goodbye.
Judge Leifman, she's not apparently a threat to anybody or to herself. What does the law provide?
Very little. She's going to be released. She's not an imminent threat to herself or anyone else.
Doesn't matter that she's been walking around for 2 days.
Not at all.
Doesn't matter that she's sometimes
incoherent. The tragedy is just beginning.
One of the other factors, Olivia probably, if she gets agitated, is going to run out the door.
Yes.
Right.
And no one's going to stop her.
And the emergency room doc is a point of reality. He's got patients stacked up. Is he going to go running after her?
He is not. Not only is he not going to go running after, every emergency room has police on duty. They aren't going to run after her either. And she's going to be lost in the streets before anyone realizes sometimes that she's even gone.
Dr. Scale, what is Olivia feeling and thinking at this moment as she heads out the door?
Probably very alone, threatened. Who can I trust? I can't trust anybody. I'm out of here. As a community psychiatrist, I am so anxious, and what a heart-wrenching story, because I'm fast-forwarding 20 years from now, and 20-year-old Olivia is now 40-year-old Olivia, and she's sitting in front of me in my community mental health agency lamenting the last 20 years that she's lost. Something does have to happen now. We need an intervention because we don't want her trickling through the system for years.
Tracy Scale, Medical Director of Cincinnati's largest behavioral health center. This is Minds on the Edge, a Fred Friendly seminar. Coming up, our panel grapples with another patient in crisis, one who knows he needs help, but it looks like he'll be falling through the system for years. Find community organizations, legislative initiatives, and extended interviews, and comment or contribute your own experience at mindsontheedge.org. We've been talking about our hypothetical Olivia, a promising young woman whose world was turned upside down in a frightening breakdown. Who are the real Olivias in this world? People among us every day coping with mental illness and its stigma. Lauren Spiro is Director of Public Policy at the National Coalition of Mental Health Consumer Survivor Organizations. Hospitalized for a year as a teen, she was labeled as a chronic schizophrenic.
I needed someone to believe in me and explore with me what happened. Okay? I didn't get that. I got medicalized, pathologized, locked up, put away. And at 16, I was terrified.
Frederick Fries, whom we heard earlier, is a psychologist with 30 years' experience in public mental health care.
Most of us are not real open about telling people that we have these psychotic conditions. Because one thing, it's not really safe to do so when you're younger and looking for a work and a career and that sort of thing.
Stigma is bad for a number of reasons.
Ellen Sachs.
As it deters people from getting treatment, these illnesses are treatable, you shouldn't have to suffer, and people staying away because of that is kind of a tragedy.
Ellen Sachs has battled chronic schizophrenia. She's also an attorney and law professor training to be a psychoanalyst.
So mine's not the story of a lone woman who overcame odds, but someone into whom enormous treatment resources were invested. You know, 4 or 5 days a week therapy for years, great psychopharmacology, other pieces like family and friends being supportive and accommodating and good job. All of those things are really important.
All three have become recognized leaders in their professional fields, and they bring unique experience to our panel. Our moderator, Frank Sesno, presents to them another scenario and another invented patient.
And now let's talk about James. James is 32 years old. James hears voices, and he's heard voices on and off for years. The voices say that he's a piece of garbage, and that if he gets close to other people, he will contaminate their souls. James has worked as a clerk in a grocery store. He's been on and off of medication. And when he's heard these voices in the past, he's had some place to turn, his mother. But a few months ago, his mother died. And that's about when the voices started coming back in a very serious way. James suffers from schizophrenia. Dr. Simpatico, what is that?
It's an illness that results in a person experiencing delusions, which are beliefs that are not supported by external realities, hallucinations, which are sensory experiences that don't correlate with external events, and alterations in thought and logic that can create sort of internally consistent ways of looking at the world but don't correlate with the outside world.
Dr. Eric Kandel is a Nobel laureate who studied neurobiology and mental illness. What's your take on this?
Well, we know that the brain is not functioning normally. We don't really know in detail the biology of schizophrenia. But schizophrenia is not just a disorder of hallucinations and delusions. People who have schizophrenia have what are called negative symptoms. They're very shy, they're withdrawn. And they also have cognitive symptoms. Their life is disorganized, they can't carry out certain tasks. And we don't know in detail what are the biological underpinnings of those components of the illness. I think we're treating mental illnesses as if they're a category by itself. And we manage this in a completely different way than any other medical illness, any other neurological illness. I see schizophrenia as just an extremely complex brain disorder. And I see this as a serious situation. And I would think that medical intervention would be essential.
Ellen Sachs, James, can you give us a sense of what he's experiencing?
Sure. I think I actually have special insight because I've experienced those things myself. I'm a person with chronic schizophrenia. The best way to describe having a psychotic episode is like a waking nightmare where things are crazy, bizarre, frightening, confusing. With schizophrenia, you have delusions and hallucinations and disordered thinking. Like I was on the roof of the Yale Law School and I was saying, someone's infiltrated our copies of the legal cases. We've got a case to joint. I don't believe in joints, but they do hold your body together. So loosely associated words and phrases. But experientially, the feeling is utter terror.
James is feeling very alone.
He needs support, and there are resources available, community mental health centers, so it might be useful for him to contact a social worker at a community mental health center and get some kind of support in his life.
James is feeling very alone, as you said, and he's scared, and he's staying in his apartment. He now can't go to work. He's paralyzed. He loses his job. But in a moment of clarity, he does know he needs help. And where he knows to go is, again, the emergency room.
Right.
But they're overflowing. They say they can't help. But they do want to commend him to an outpatient clinic, Commonwealth Clinic, and so they give him an appointment there at 3 o'clock on Wednesday, 3 weeks from now. Sam Semberis, you're the founder and executive director of Pathways to Housing. Surprise you?
No. It's all too familiar and disappointing that very few people referred out of emergency rooms actually make it to outpatient clinics. He needs a different kind of an approach. He needs an intensive case manager that can actually escort him out of that emergency room to the next...
Wait. They've given him an appointment and he's not even going to end up there? Estelle Richmond?
Oh, no. James probably doesn't wear a watch. He's already disoriented. He doesn't know 3 weeks from 3 months. But if he's in an active psychotic episode right then, he needs treatment now, not in 3 weeks.
Lauren Spiro, what do you think?
James is absolutely in crisis, and his mom has just died.
This is a major crisis. And of course he's going to have very strong feelings about it. And being locked up or bringing in police, or that's really scary. That is going to escalate. If I'm James, that's going to escalate me. I need a safe place.
And you tell me this happens all the time.
He will not be admitted. He has not represented any danger to himself or others. They will not keep him, and they will treat him as another person coming through that emergency
room. So James walks out with his appointment 3 weeks from now.
And maybe a prescription.
And maybe a prescription, and is disoriented. He is now about to have something else happen.
That's right.
He is arrested.
That's right.
For public urination. He now goes not to the hospital, Judge Leifman, but to
jail.
Surprised?
Not at all. Judges are much more likely to see consumers with mental illness than psychiatrists.
Judges are more likely than psychiatrists to see?
By far.
You see more people with mental illness than Dr. Scale here?
Probably 10 times more a day than she does.
What is going on here?
Well, he's committed a crime. And the law enforcement officer is there to enforce the law. And the public's outraged. This guy is exposing himself. He's urinating in this beautiful rose bush, and the woman who owns the rose bush is outraged, and she calls the police, and they come and they do their job.
Senator Avell Gordley.
We assume that the police encounter has that outcome. The police are poorly trained. The police tackle James on the street.
James runs from them, so it's going to be a resisting a police officer. It's now a felony. It's unlikely it ends up as a urination case.
Pete Early, step aside from your role for a minute and speak as a journalist. What's happened here?
Well, in the 60s and 70s, we had a little under 1 million people in state mental hospitals, and many of these places were horrific places. We started closing them down. We never built the community system necessary. Today, there are less than 55,000 people in state hospitals. There are 300,000 with bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, and major depression in jail, 500,000 on probation. That's due to two things, in my opinion. No community safety net and laws that say a person has to be a danger before anyone can successfully intervene.
Let me pick up James' story there. James is back on the street. Judge Stephen Leifman.
Don't you understand that the mental health system is a definition of insanity at this point? We keep doing the same thing again and again, and we expect a different outcome. It will not change until the system changes. What's most likely is going to happen, he may run into the same police officer. And the officer says, you know what? I took him in on a misdemeanor, and they let him right out. So now, you know, he ran away from me. I'm going to charge him with a felony. So he's going to come into the felony system, and he's going to sit 8 times longer than someone without mental illness for the same charge, because we don't know what to do with him. And we're going to get him into a forensic state hospital so we can restore his competency, not so we can get him back to the community for treatment, so we can try him and send him to prison or jail. In Florida, a third of our mental health money is going to 1,700 beds to restore competency. And then there's no money at the front end to keep people out. That's your reality.
Estelle Richmond.
The problem is we refer to it as a system, and it isn't a system. It is lots of things that are sort of put together almost by bubblegum, as opposed to by any plan. And the goal for most of us in policy-making positions is to try to untangle it enough to create a system.
Estelle Richmond, Secretary of Public Welfare for the state of Pennsylvania, trying to patch together solutions in a broken system. Just ahead, we'll hear from some people who are reshaping mental health care in communities across the country. This is Minds on the Edge, a Fred Friendly seminar on mental health in America. I'm Cokie Roberts.